animal die. I am man the rebel, man helpless serf. Fate and my fellows cheat me of my wage. I loosen with my blood my servitude seal, and shake from my aching neck the oppressor's knees, only to seat new tyrants on my back. My teachers lesson me in slavery. I am shown God's stamp and my own signature upon the sorry contract of my fate. I have loved, but none has loved me since my birth. My fruit of works is given to other hands. To conclude this great oration, you see little bit the next page, 507, line 152 or so, about 12 lines from the top. He says, I am the victim of titanic ills. I am the doer of demoniac deeds. I was made for evil. Evil is my lot. Evil I must be, and by evil live. Not other can I do but be myself. What nature made me, that I must remain. I suffer and toil and weep. I moan and hate. So all the love and kindness and compassion that God has given to the world ultimately ends up at the other end with hatred. That is the poisonous stuff that is contained here. Well, there are other Madonnas equally powerful, and again the great thing about this is all these Madonnas have one speech writer, and that is Sri Aurobindo. So he lifts them so high. The Madonnas were to read this, they would say, did I say this? So powerful, so beautiful. I will read a little bit of the This is the Madonna of Might. This is on page 509. Little bit I'll read up. About line 234, about 10 lines from the bottom. This is the Madonna of Might. This is Durga. I smite the titan who bestrides the world and slay the augur in his blood-stained den. I am Durga, goddess of the proud and strong, and Lakshmi, queen of the fair and fortunate. I wear the face of Kali when I kill. I trample the corpses of the demon hordes. I am charged by God to do his mighty work. Uncaring, I serve his will who sent me forth, reckless of peril and earthly consequence. Well, then the Madonna of this, sorry, the perversion of this Madonna says, this is the Rajasic ego that sometimes captures great scientists, inventors, great industrialists, and it makes them say the following. On page 511, this is the perversion saying, four lines from the bottom, line 315, if you have that book. For me and my use, the universe was made. Immortal spirit in the perishing day, clay, I am God, still unevolved in the human form. Even if he is not, he becomes in me. I am God. And even if God doesn't know what to do, he should come into me because I will show him how to become God. The sun and moon are lights upon my path. Air was invented for my lungs to breathe. Conditioned as a wide and wallless space for my winged chariot's wheels to cleave a road. The sea was made for me to swim and sail and bear my golden commerce on its back. It laughs cloven by my pleasure's gliding keel. I laugh at its black stare of fate and death. The earth is my floor. The sky is my living roof. All was prepared through many a silent age. God made experiments with animal shapes. Then only when all was ready, I was born. The entire creation, all this evolution, all this drama, just for me, so that I can appear on the scene. I was born weak and small and ignorant, a helpless creature in a difficult world, traveling through my brief years and death at my side. But now, I have grown greater than nature, wiser than God. I have made real what she never dreamed. She meaning nature. I have made real what she never dreamed. I have seized her powers and harnessed for my work. I have shaped her metals and new metals made. I will make glass and raiment out of milk. Plastic will all be outdated. Glass made out of milk. You'll wear clothes made out of milk. All that you have to do when you are hungry, just lick your collar. You know, these are all, science and technology have done wonderful things, but primarily in terms of looking after our secondary needs. They don't look after our primary needs, only the secondary needs. Touch button efficiency in the kitchen. As you drive home, you touch a few buttons and whatever your oven or whatever is fixed at 250 degrees centigrade, this is boiling, burning, by the time you come the meal is ready. Is that the purpose of all our ingenuity, all our science? So, science and technology are wonderful things, but looking after our secondary needs, that's all they do. I will make glass and raiment out of milk, make iron velvet, water unbreakable stone. Like God in his astuce of artist skill, mold from one primal plasm protean forms, in single nature multitudinous lives, all that imagination can conceive, in mind intangible remold anew, in matters plastic, solid and concrete. No magic can surpass my magic skill. There is no miracle I shall not achieve. What God imperfect left, I will complete. Out of a tangled mind and half-made soul, his sin and error I will eliminate. What he invented not, I shall invent. He was the first creator, I am the last. This is a Rajasic ego. You will see reflections in these in many people. Then of course there is the Sattvic ego also. The unfortunate thing about Sattvic ego is that Sattvic ego considers the luster on its face, which is the luster of ego, as spiritual resplendence. That's all. It's very difficult to convince Sattvic people that there is plenty of scope for improvement even in them. They only talk about other people. We are different. We are sattvic. And they have their own limitations, and Savitri talks, meets that Madonna as well, and that Madonna's perversion as well. But you will find the perversions are very often more interesting than the Madonna's. This is because of Aurobindo's poetry. His poetry has such vital power, if he wants. That's why I sometimes feel the world missed a second Shakespeare. But one Shakespeare is good enough. I think we don't need too many. But he had to be Sri Aurobindo. Now here on page 518, this sattvic ego is talking about what he can do. Well, let's not read too much into it. Let's say, middle of that page, line, let us say line 544, just a little bit. I have mapped the heavens and analyzed the stars. Mapped the heavens. I know exactly what constellation, where, this. I have mapped the heavens and analyzed the stars. Described their orbits through the grooves of space. Measured the miles that separate the suns. Computed their longevity in time. I can tell you exactly when the sun is going to get cold. I have delved into earth's bowels and torn out the riches guarded by her dull brown soil. I have classed the changes of her stony crust and of her biography discovered the dates, rescued the pages of all nature's plan, including the DNA. I know everything about man. The tree of evolution I have sketched, each branch and twig and leaf in its own place. In the embryo tracked the history of forms and the genealogy framed of all that lives. I have detected plasm and cell and gene, the protozoa traced, man's ancestors, the humble originals from which he rose, from whom he rose. I know how he was born and how he dies. Only what end he serves, I know not yet. We know how we are born and how we are going to die, but what we are supposed to do with our life here on earth, we don't know. I know how he was born and how he dies, and only what end he serves, I know not yet. Or if there is aim at all or any end, or push of rich creative purposeful joy in the wide works of the terrestrial power. I just give you a sample of these Madonnas and their perversion. And Savitri says to each of these Madonnas, after listening to the Madonna and the perversion, sure, you have come from my soul, but there are other powers my soul needs to acquire before this soul can help the world. That's what I have been saying. The consciousness of man is still too fractured, still too weak to be able to help the gods to succeed. So this is what Savitri says typically to each one of those Madonnas. On page 520, where you have a new section beginning, three lines from the beginning of that section. O Madonna of light, mother of joy and peace, thou art a portion of myself, put forth to raise the spirit to its forgotten heights, and wake the soul by touches of the heavens. Because thou art, the soul draws near to God. Because thou art, love grows in spite of hate, and knowledge walks unslain in the pit of night. But not by showering heaven's golden rain upon the intellect's hard and rocky soil can the tree of paradise flower on earthly ground, and the bird of paradise sit upon life's boughs, and the winds of paradise visit mortal air. even if the rain down intuitions rain, the mind of man will think it earth's own gleam, his spirit by spiritual ego sink, or his soul dream shut in sainthood's brilliant cell, where only a bright shadow of God can come. His hunger for the eternal thou must nurse, and fill his yearning heart with heaven's fire, and bring God down into his body and life. One day I will return, his hand in mine, and thou shalt see the face of the Absolute. Then shall the holy marriage be achieved. Then shall the divine family be born. There shall be light and peace in all the worlds. Yes. There is still some more work to be done. Well, I don't want to dwell on this too long. What we must remember is all the gods that we have been worshipping belong to the overmental world. They are powerful, no doubt about it. But as I have been saying, they don't have the power to change the fundamental nature of human life. If you offer them a prayer and ask for any return, worldly return, the chances are they may listen to you once in a while and grant your prayer. If you want more power, more money, more prestige, a better house, etc., etc., they can grant this to you. But only when they give these gifts to you, you realize that the gifts don't ultimately satisfy you. The money which you wanted, which you thought would fulfill all your requirements, has created more problems than it has solved. This is exactly always happens. We ask the Lord, we ask God for the wrong things. He gives us what we ask for most of the time. But that doesn't improve our life basically in a fundamental way. So we must ask for the right thing. What is the right thing to be asked? The right thing to be asked is, make my heart a place where higher gods can descend and help me fight this war against the adversaries. This is the only thing you can. That new god, new power, is the supramental consciousness. Somebody asked the mother, once we turn to your yoga, is there still a scope to worship the older gods, the gods we have been worshipping? Well, the mother said, once you are on my path and start getting experiences, then you will not be satisfied with any worship of the old gods or all those gods put together. So mother didn't say, don't worship them. You know, this is something very important, because there has been a tendency, even right from Sri Aurobindo's time, to say, you are very great, but for me you are only another form of Lord Krishna. Now, if you put Sri Aurobindo's photograph and see in him Lord Krishna, it's better to put Krishna's photograph. Sri Aurobindo didn't mind. He said, okay, you can reach me even through Krishna. It's possible. But the important point is, Sri Aurobindo and the mother represent a new search, a new quest, looking for a new consciousness. And so this is something we should never forget. And so worshipping Sri Aurobindo and the mother doesn't mean worshipping their photographs, but trying to offer the allegiance of our heart, directing the whole of our sadhana to this new focus. And we should not allow anything to come between our adoration and this new focus. And so, I leave it at that, and we have seen Savitri has met these goddesses who belong to the overmental world. She does admit the wonderful work that these gods and goddesses have done, but she also has shown how in fundamental respects this work that these gods have done is not yet adequate to change human nature, to change the world and its quota of happiness and suffering, for which we need to go one step higher, worship gods who will bring this new consciousness. And that's what Savitri will now do in the next canto, finding of her soul. We will talk about it tomorrow. I've been told by some of my occult-minded friends that today's date has a special significance. 3-3-3, 3-3-0-3. Let us see what comes out. I really do not know. We have been now looking, as I said, at the mother's footprints through the pages of Savitri. And yesterday we looked at cantos 2, 3 and 4 of book 7. And we now move on to canto 5, and then you have canto 6, and then you have canto 7. And all these three cantos are so rich and so complex that it will not be possible for us to do justice to any one of them during these 3 days. So I won't try to do that, because as we know, we are not doing a close study of these cantos. We have done that in the past. We are making a quick review of certain salient parts of it for our purpose, which is, as I said, trying to trace the footprints of the mother. And this is, again, I have always cautioned myself, is a very risky business, but as far as the human intellect can help you in these matters, I think we should try to go walk that distance. Now, if you remember, 3 or 4 days ago, I raised this question: how close did Ashwapati get to the supramental experience? And we saw in canto 3 of book 3, when Ashwapati rises into the transcendental world, he has the experience of the world to be, the future, the supramental future that is awaiting to descend. And in sections 3 and 4 of that canto, we have some very beautiful descriptions of the supramental world. Now, Ashwapati, as soon as he has this experience, being Ashwapati, immediately thinks of the fallen earth, the world that has been waiting for the descent of this great world. And therefore, when he meets in that world the Supreme Mother, he pleads on behalf of mankind that something be done to bring this world down to the earth. This is something no human being can do, only an avatar can do it. And the avatar has to intervene, and the Supreme Mother graciously gives him this blessing, this boon, and somebody, she says, will be born, and this desire of his, this prayer of his will be fulfilled. Another consequence of that, Savitri is born. Now, there is no reference here for after this. Ashwapati's role in this epic effectively concludes, except that he surfaces briefly in book 6, the book of fate. Otherwise, we don't have any reference to Ashwapati. Now, what about Savitri? Savitri, did she acquire the supramental consciousness, she should have, she must have, because that was the purpose, the mission of her avatar, that was what she came here to do. But where? Where in Savitri does Sri Aurobindo refer to it? This is a question. But this is a question which very brave hearts have refused to answer. People have indicated this indirectly, but directly nobody has said this exactly is where Savitri crosses the overmental boundary and now is entering the supramental. Now, this is partly because for fear of being proved wrong. But I have no such fear. Because in any case, many of the things I have said will be proved wrong. And I don't regret that I will be proved wrong. But an attempt has to be made, and I have no direct contact hotline with the mother either. Where exactly does this come? How exactly does it come? We pure humans use our reason, our inference, our intuition, etc. and arrive at certain conclusions. These are all, in their very nature, hypotheses subject to revision by people who have seen more, learnt more, acquired more, etc. So, these are the preliminary remarks. And so, I was looking for this, and by and large, people have said that the time when Savitri is about to vanquish death, she is able to do that because she has acquired the supramental abilities, the consciousness which the supramental gives you. So I will read out a little bit of that and see what exactly happens there. But my own hunch is that Savitri does that before the end of book 7. Supramental, to me, doesn't come just descend, it has to be acquired through yoga. And Savitri was doing the yoga because of which this descent took place in her. That's my hunch. Now, it will not be possible in this kind of a presentation to give all the reasons, etc. This is my intuition, and I will read out passages which confirm my view of my reading of this particular canto. Now, the finding of the soul, the Savitri's way, was not Ashwapati's way. Ashwapati's way was a direct ascent. He goes through all the worlds, including the mental worlds, the spiritual worlds, and finds himself at the border of the highest mental world, where he finds a passage, as it were, to Nirvana. And he refuses this dispensation, and then he realizes there has to be a truth beyond Nirvana, but it exactly doesn't know where it is, and in this search he goes into the transcendental world. Savitri, however, doesn't take that route. She takes the route of the psychic. She first reaches the psychic or opens her psychic, and through that she makes a rapid survey of the various worlds, and now she is about to find the source of her psychic, as it were. It is the psychic, as Sri Aurobindo and the mother have told us, is a projection, is an emanation of the Jivatman. Now, Jivatman is that aspect or part of your soul or spirit which has presided over several incarnations we have had on this earth. As we all know, this is not our first birth. We have had several births before, and we are going to have several births from after this is ended. And Jivatman is that presence or that aspect of the soul which presides over this entire series of births. Now, the Jivatman itself is a spark from the fire of the Divine. The Jivatman itself is an aspect of the Supreme Divine Mother. So in one sense, the Supreme Divine Mother becomes the Jivatman, multiple centers of the Divine, and the Jivatman sends an emanation or projection here, which is a psychic, and over many, many, many births, At a certain stage, the psychic becomes the psychic being, acquires an individuality. So, in our case, when we seek union with our soul, with the Jivatman, we have the union with this emanation, with this of the Supreme Divine Mother. Of course, now one or two things from this are clear, and that is, our psychic being is present, is kept within us, is present in us. In other words, some portion of the Divine Mother is always in us, and if we have any spiritual future, it's not because our mind and our vital and our body can do any tapasya, but because the Divine Mother has sent a part of herself which resides in us. So ultimately, the sadhana is to be done by the Divine Mother in us. And our sadhana consists of allowing the Divine Mother to do this sadhana. Our sadhana consists on removing the obstacles so that the psychic being in us can do the sadhana. So, the mother used to say to her disciples, she has said it once or twice, sadhana is not your job, sadhana is my job. She was not saying something facetious, something very clever. She really meant it. What she meant was, I am already present in you. No matter where you are, which part of the world you are, whether in the US or UK or wherever, I am already there in you. Now why don't you be aware of me, become more and more aware of me, and let that presence come to the front. And the psychic has an inherent spiritual wisdom. It is normally turned to the sun, like the sunflower, to the values of the sun, the values of the supramental. It's turned in that direction. So, if you trust the leadership of the psychic, automatically your sadhana will bring you, sooner or later, to the fulfillment. That is the path that we have all to follow. Now the question to raise is, if Savitri is an incarnation of the Supreme Divine Mother, then in her case, her soul must be none other than the Supreme Divine Mother herself, because she is an incarnation of the Divine Mother. You and I are also in one sense incarnations, but through the Jivatman and from the Jivatman is sent its emanation, and it's in a very, very unevolved form. It takes us many lives, probably some animal lives as well, before we someday become human. And even when you are human, it takes several lives later until we become a well-formed psychic being. This is a long journey, and therefore the notion of rebirth is very integral to Sri Aurobindo's metaphysics, Sri Aurobindo's way of explaining these things. So the first point I would like to make is that in Savitri's case, since Savitri is an incarnation, her soul, to which the psychic now rises to and merges with, must be the Supreme Divine Mother herself. Now if she merges with the Supreme Divine Mother, and then it's also the description, this power of the Divine Mother descends into all the centers of her being, the Mahakundalini, as they call it, the supramental Kundalini as it were, all the powers descend into Savitri. For me, it is another way of saying that Savitri now acquires all the supramental powers. They impregnate various centers of her being. And later on, if you see the description that Sri Aurobindo gives of this journey as she approaches the heart or the soul, Savitri's soul, a psychic approaches the Savitri's soul, the description is absolutely out of this world. The kind of atmosphere he creates suggests that this is not a normal occasion when somebody, you know, finds his soul or merges with the soul, but this is an extraordinary kind of occasion. And it is extraordinary because the supramental had not yet come down. Savitri is instrumental in doing it. And to be able to do it, Savitri herself must receive it in her own being first. And so when Savitri receives it in her being, it is the first that ever this ever happened on this earth. So it's a kind of extraordinary atmosphere that Sri Aurobindo creates, or language he uses to describe this. These are some of the preliminary remarks, and we will now start looking at the canto not in any detail, but at least the main parts of this canto. Since Savitri has been following the sunlit path of the psychic, she doesn't have the need of what is in other mystical traditions called the dark night of the soul. The psychic, there is no dark night of the soul. But something resembling the dark night of the soul, Savitri goes through for a brief period, because she is now doing something which has never been done before, which is transcending the over-mental level and going into the level higher than that, the supramental level. Since this is being done for the first time, there has to be a period when Savitri empties herself and completely surrenders herself, becomes totally a zero as it were, and it is this passage, through this experience, is what is called, or what may be called in Savitri's case, her experience of the dark night of the soul. It's not the dark night of the soul. Dark night of the soul, you very often find it described in the lives of Christian mystics and other mystics as well. I'm using the term dark night of the soul because that's a convenient phrase. It doesn't have the same connotation. page 522. Line 11, middle of that page. An innocent and holy ignorance, adored like one who worships formless God, the unseen light she could not claim nor own. In a simple purity of emptiness, her mind knelt down before the unknowable. All was abolished save her naked self and the prostrate yearning of her surrendered heart. There was no strength in her, no pride of force. The lofty burning of desire had sunk. Ashamed, a vanity of separate self, the hope of spiritual greatness fled. Salvation she asked not, nor a heavenly crown. Humility seemed now too proud a state. Herself was nothing, God alone was all. Yet God she knew not, but only knew he was. A sacred darkness brooded now within. The world was a deep darkness, great and nude. This is our lines expressing this experience, which I have, for as I said, for lack of another term, called the dark night of the soul, experience of the dark night for Savitri. Now this becomes necessary in Savitri, as I said, that she is now taking a plunge into the future which never has been taken by anyone on earth. That's the significance of this. And this is the passage which connects probably the supramental region with the overmental, the heights of the overmental. Now, there are explanations, there are lines, passages which suggest that Savitri is entering what is called the causal world, that world which is called generally the causal world. And as I said, it is this world that now Savitri is approaching, and it's very difficult exactly to say what is happening here, but as I said, my hunch is this, in Savitri's case, is her beginning of entry into the supramental world. That begins on page 523. At last, page 523, line 39, about 8 lines from the top. At last a change approached, the emptiness broke. The emptiness, the feeling of emptiness, which the experience of the dark night had given her, that now completely vanished. At last a change approached, the emptiness broke, a wave rippled within, the world had stirred. Once more her inner self became her space. There was felt a blissful nearness to the goal. Heaven leaned low to kiss the sacred hill. heaven, leaned low to kiss the sacred hill. The air trembled with passion and delight. A rose of splendor on a tree of dreams, the face of dawn out of moon twilight grew. A rose of splendor on a tree of dreams, the face of dawn out of moon twilight grew. Day came, priest of a sacrifice of joy, into the worshipping silence of the world. He carried immortal luster as his robe, trailed heaven like a purple scarf, and wore as his vermilion caste mark a red sun. And I don't know, for some reason these lines look so uplifting, I can't just believe this is an experience of an ordinary kind of an elevated kind. Ordinary doesn't mean every morning it happens to somebody, but there have been people who have reached this height without going into the supramental consciousness. But this here, there are two things here. One is, at a later point, Shobindra tries to generalize it, and then he talks about the psychic and meeting with the Jivatman, which applies to our yoga, your yoga and my yoga. Savitri's yoga is not, although the form is the same, the height is not the same. It's a different kind of Savitri, being a different kind of person. She's being an emanation of an avatar herself. Nirodha kept writing to Shobindra, you see, you are an avatar, anything is possible for you, what about human beings like me?
Hidden eyes, he sees the secret things no words can speak, and know the goal of the unconscious world, the heart of the mystery, the German ears, which is senses of the German ears. In this dense field when nothing is plain or sure, when very being seems to us questionable, when life is able to experiment, the soul of flickering light in a strange, ignorant world, the earth a brute mechanic accident.